I'm going to start singing, then it wouldn't be this. And you guys would have been like, oh, get it. You should be an R&B artist, right? Hey, you know what? Like, can I tell you something? The Super Bowl is today and Valentine's Day. It's coming soon, right? Like, how soon? Anybody know? Tomorrow! But can I tell you something even more exciting? Like, you should get ready to cheer and, like, scream and yell. After first service, I had two people come up and talk to me about baptism and wanting to give their life to Jesus. And that, like, yeah. Good night. Now, if your spouse or whoever cheers louder for the Bengals than for that, you smack them today, all right? You got me? That should be like, we should be going crazy. That's awesome. You want to try it one more time? You guys want a chance to go crazy on it? All right, come on. Like, pretend the Bengals just scored a touchdown, all right? Won the Super Bowl. We had two people who decided to give their life to Jesus today. Yeah. Woo. Amen. Good night. All right, we got it. We got it on that one. All right, so previously on, Kent talks about sex, all right? So that last week, if you don't know, we had a sex sermon, and this week is going to be part two of that. It was a very, I would say, intense sermon. And you guys know what I talked about was how the biblical theology of sex, I took us to that. And I said, what were the intentions? If we could look at God creating sex, why did he create it? What was it for? And what we looked at was that the intention of God for sex was that it would be the thing that would unite two people, a man and a woman together, and they would come together through that union. And through that, eventually they'd produce offspring. But we talked about the biblical mandate for that. Let me read this to you out of Genesis chapter 2. Verse 23 and 24 says this. This is the passage that I preached on last week. The man said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man." We talked about how how woman came from man, but biblically, but every man will come through woman. Like it is, there's this cycle that happens from that. And he says this in verse 24, "That is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh." It is the one flesh union that is actually where a marriage begins. Now, I know that is so counter to what most of us have been taught. Most of us were taught that marriage begins when you stand up in front of somebody like me and they say to you, and you say, I do, and I do. And then the person up here goes, and one of these, and woo, you may kiss, and then you kiss, and then you're married, right? And that's how we think about, but that's actually the wedding. The marriage, actually, you know what? The old way of talking about this, you may have heard this idea before. Have you ever heard of somebody saying they consummated the marriage? Consummating the marriage is when people have sex, and it's when they actually become married. Like, they went through the marriage ceremony, but they consummate it. They become one flesh when they have sex together. That's how the old folks used to talk about it back in the day. So that was last week's sermon. I don't want to bore you by rehashing that entire sermon. I will say, if you missed it, especially if you have kids, you need to go listen to that sermon. Get it on our podcast, get it on Facebook, do something, but listen to that sermon and start to think about these ideas and these concepts of this theology of sex and what it means and all that. So that was last week, was the Creator's intention. This week is we're ready for part two. And part two is really this: what does this mean for us? So if the idea is that sex happens, when somebody has sex, that they become one flesh with a person, they become married, there are some serious implications to that. And some of you started to think through some of those implications probably last week, and we talked about grace at the end of the sermon, if you remember, and how we need to come to each other with grace. And I will say again today, as I talk about the implications of this biblical concept of sex, I need to just warn you up front again. There are going to be things in this sermon that you maybe go, oh, that's me. Like, I had bought into this way of thinking. I'd grown up in this way of thinking. It has influenced everything I've done since. And my goal for you today is not to slap you in the face and tell you how bad you are and try to make you feel really guilty and shameful. My goal is to say, this is how it's always been. This is how God intended it. And what if we all started to wake up and some of us repented and some of us found healing and some of us found freedom and some of us found forgiveness and all those things? It's not to have you come in here and just feel beat up by the sermon, okay? Is everybody okay with that? Just say, yes, Kent, makes me feel so good. All right, oh, thanks, Joel, you're so good, all right. So here's the first implication, okay? I've got two implications for you if you're keeping track. I would actually write these down, and let me say, if you are a parent, these things are huge for you to think through. You need to think about how you're going to talk to your kids about this stuff. Implication one, the demotion of sex by the world, where God elevates it. So this idea is that our world has this tendency to just demote sex. It just is this hunger that you feel. It's just some feeling that you have. It's some emotion that you have. It's some thing that you do where God has elevated it, right? We said God looks at it and he says, this is how you become one flesh with somebody. And so it's demoted over here, but God is elevated over here. And there are huge implications for this. So let me give you an illustration. About 10 years ago, I started having couples come to my office, and they would often look like this. They would be like holding hands. And they're like all loving like that, you know? You ever seen those couples and they're like in love and we love each other? And they would say, can't we just love each other so much? Can we want to get married? Would you marry us? And I'd be like, I'm already married, I'm taken, I'm sorry. And then I'd be like, oh, perform your wedding. Yes, I could do that for you. And so I will offer to perform their wedding, but what I have them do is they have to go through 6 weeks of premarital counseling with me. And what we do is we talk about some of these ideas, and we talk about a whole host of stuff, finances and kids and all that stuff, but we go through all of these things. So if you want me to perform your wedding, be prepared. I'm going to make you go through 6 weeks. And so here's what I found. I would always do this interview at the beginning of these premarital counseling sessions, and one of the first questions I would ask is, are you living together? Now, here's what you need to know. About 10 years ago, people's answers to this question started to shift. I noticed it for a while. It would be like some were living together, some weren't. But about 10 years ago, it was almost exclusively every person that came into my office. It didn't matter if they were super involved in a church or never been in a church before. They would come in and they would say, yeah, we're living together. And then I would ask them this question, are you having sex together? And what was crazy was they no longer felt like they needed to lie to me. See, people before that would just lie to me, right? Like, they'd be like, no, pastor, we're not having sex. But now they'd be like, yeah, we're having sex. We live together. What do you, I mean, it's not like we're just hanging out in our separate rooms, right? They were living together. They were sleeping in the same bed together. And I found that there was this huge monumental shift in the way our culture was thinking about and dealing with marriage, sex, relationships, all of that. So here's what I wanted to do for a moment. I had you do a thought experiment last week. I want to do a thought experiment this week. I want to just for a moment ignore for the moment what the Bible's idea of sex is, of what happens when we have sex, and how it unites yourself with a person. All right, so I would like to ignore that for a moment. Like, that is my framework. That's my theology. That's what I'm coming to the table with, is that those people really have already married themselves. Like, they are already married. They're just asking me to perform a ceremony. And what they're really saying to each other is, okay, now we're ready to be committed to each other. We did the marriage act. Now we're ready to be committed to each other, right? So let me just take you through this thought experiment for a second and see whether this way of doing things is a good idea. Here's what happens. You meet him at a bar, which you probably lie about that too, right? And you met him at a bar and you started to like each other, and oh man, he's a hunk, and oh, she's so beautiful. And you guys went on like 2 or 3 dates, and you've seen all the TV shows. You know about how to do this. And so after 2 or 3 dates, you guys started smoocherooching, right? And you're like, and I love you. And, oh, you said he loves me. I love you too. We both love each other. And then your brain started to get flooded with all of these hormones as you're touching each other's bodies. And you were making out, and making out led to you having sex for the first time. Sound familiar? I mean, it may be some version of that, right? Now, here's what's really funny to me. Language is really important, right? Do you know what they used to call making out back in the day? They called it foreplay. Do you know why? It was the play that you did before you had sex. We changed the language to making out. And now sex isn't even called sex, right? We call it hooking up, like I hooked up with her last night, right? Or I didn't know this because I'm old, but there was a pastor in kind of our region who one time was preaching to his church, and he was like, you know, maybe you just like went home and you watched Netflix and chilled, right? Now, to younger adults, that means that you had sex. That you, he meant that they went and watched Netflix and chilled. Like some young person was like, "You just said they all went and had sex," and like he didn't even know, because our language has changed about all this. Because what happens? The world demotes this as God elevates it. And so what happens is you and I grow up in this culture. And I would actually say my gut is, I could be wrong about this, this isn't a hard and fast rule. My gut is, if you're 45 and under, there's a huge chance that you came into whatever relationship you're in the model that I described, where you met each other, you dated, you had sex, and then the next step for you was to live together. If you're 45 and up, there's a good chance that maybe you chose to wait and not at least cohabitate until after you were married. The model has shifted, right? And so here's what happens in the model, is you've met at the bar, you've dated, I love her, I love him, oh, we said I love you, you have sex, that was good, you loved that, and in the moment that you had the sex, your brain released this concoction of hormones that we talked about last week. Do you remember this? Dopamine floods your brain. Prolactin floods your brain. Oxytocin, the love hormone, the hormone that connects you to another person, floods your brain. For who? The person that you've known for 2 or 3 weeks. You don't know anything about them. You know you don't know anything about them, right? You all do know that people lie to you for like the first 2 years about who they are. And it's not even 10 years till you really know, like where you're comfortable. Like first couple of years, it's all just lies and people trying to be the best version of themselves. I'm living the best life, me. This is the best me I can be. And you're like, yeah, but you can't hold that up, man. Like, right? And so you, after 2 or 3 weeks, have flooded your brain with these hormones, and they have left you in love with this person. The dopamine that dropped into your brain at huge amounts was saying, that was really nice, and that's a good place to get that again if you want. And so what do? You keep coming back, and pretty soon you're like, you know what? I'm over here all the time. Like, I brought clothes over. We should just move in together. And you are like your own Friends episode, right? And you have, I put that in for Rachel. She was like, you keep mentioning Friends. I need you to do it every week. You guys can make requests of me too. I'm here all week. You all of a sudden are living together. You've moved in together. You are living the dream. And you know what happens next after? This is the next thing that people do. You get a dog, right? Because now you've tested that, and you need to see, like, okay, I need to see if they're going to be a good parent. So, and let's be honest, for the first 5 years of a kid's life, not much difference between a dog and a kid, right? Like, there's a lot of slobber, a lot of other things. I mean, it's just, so you get a dog together, and then you get a washer and dryer together, and you start to just live the life. Here's the problem. Sex, if I'm right about all of this, if the Bible's right about all this, sex was meant to be God's gift to the married life. It was meant to be this wonderful thing that drew you together. I like to think of it like this, a healthy married relationship. Now, I understand some of you are not in healthy married relationships. So just understand, I'm talking about somebody who's committed. They're generally loving to each other. They're generally good to each other. In that kind of marriage relationship where the people are coming to it with a Christ-like attitude of serving one another, in that kind of relationship, sex is like going from the bottom floor of a house to the top floor of a house. And it's like walking up a staircase. It's solid. It's strong. You have there's no worries about what you're getting into and where you're going. Because when you get up there, there's just more room to explore. And it is just as solid as the floor below it. Because everything about it has this solid foundation under it. But what is sex in that context? Like those people who within the first few weeks start to have sex. And some of you who have had multiple sex partners, you know this to be true. It's more like climbing up on top of a ladder and standing on the top rung. There is a strong chance that you might fall off and break something or get broken yourself. It is not stable. It can be exhilarating. But it can also be scary as all get out, right? That's the difference. So what God intended was for it to be this magnificent thing that drew people together and made them fall in love with each other even deeper ways and to be connected to each other. It all of a sudden becomes this thing that we're doing just for my own pleasure. I'm just doing it for myself. And sometimes my heart just gets devastated in it. And so what do I tell these couples as they come in? Instead of drawing together into a committed relationship, what we end up doing is we live with the fear that the other person could leave anytime the relationship becomes inconvenient. Why? This is what I do. So these couples come in, this is the process over the last 10 years, most of them come in with, and they're sitting in my office, and I say this, the problem for you is that you used to be in relationships, I'll take a pen and I'll draw this on a paper, there were these two lines, and the two lines were a person's life. And the old way of doing it was that you would live your life and you would get in relationship with each other, you'd love each other, you'd learn about each other, you'd investigate each other, you'd find out, is this person the kind of person I want to be with, that I want to commit with? And your lines would go like this, and eventually you would get married, and then your two lives would come together into one point, and it would become one line, right? So all of a sudden, my finances are her finances. All of a sudden, my house is your house. All of a sudden, it's not my car, it's our cars. Everything joins together into one line. But here's what has happened, it is happening, with couples who cohabitate. And here's an interesting thing. There is a statistic that actually says that if you cohabitate, meaning you live together before getting married, you are at a higher chance for divorce than are people who don't. Did you know that? I ask these couples that. This isn't something Christians came up with, and Christians were like, we gotta really sell people on that one flesh idea, right? This is sociologists doing research and looking at how people live and real science. You're at a higher likelihood for divorce if you cohabitated. Why is that? Well, it's because what happens is those two people, the same two lines are drawn, but the lines start to go like this and they intersect and they weave back and forth. And there's parts of their life that combine, we got a dog. Don't you love the dog? And then there's parts of their lives that come apart. Those are my bills, those are your bills. And then there's parts of their lives that come back together. We bought a washer and dryer together. And then there's parts of their life that go apart again. I call this, when I'm counseling people, roommate issues. Now let me say to those of you who come into this place and you came into this as roommates, you are not destined for failure, okay? I tell that to, but it is important for you to understand that you came into your relationship not understanding that you were going to deal with roommate issues. If you don't identify them and start, I've had couples who, as I start to talk about this, will week in and week out, I don't bring it up. They'll start bringing it up to me. They'll be like, oh, we found another roommate issue. He was giving me money out of his paycheck like it was an allowance for me. And it was like something you might do for a roommate, not for somebody that is you're one with. And we've got to figure out how to fix that because it puts him in control in the dynamics of our relationship, and I have no control. I didn't even tell him that. They're bringing that to me. Why? Because they recognize that they came into this relationship as roommates. What is the person who comes in like this and gets married? It's not that these people are perfect, but it's that they come in, and when they get married, my money is not my money. Guess what? There was a time period in our marriage where I worked a full-time job and my wife stayed home with kids. What that means, you guys all know this, right, is that I worked hard and she did nothing, right? What? You guys should be wanting to punch me in the face right now. I think it was like a couple weeks where she worked this other job and my job's real flexible and I was like, I can write sermons from home. And so I was like, I'm super done. I can be stay. Oh, this is so easy, Jenny. You just go work. I'll do this. She went and worked. After 2 weeks, I was like, please come home. Please. Like, kids have me handcuffed. And it was the hardest job. But guess who was bringing in, who was getting paid for their job and who wasn't? Mine was not 24 hours. Hers was 24 hours. I was getting paid for this easy job. She was getting paid nothing. It would have been easy for me to come into that and be like, well, wife, let me pay you. Or, you know what? Here's your stipend of the money. All the rest is mine. I'll spend it on whatever I want. No. That money was our money. I never once thought of it as Kent's money. Our money has always been our money. But you can see how if we had come into this relationship in that dynamic of roommates, it would have affected everything. What I'm trying to get you guys to see is that our society has downgraded sex to just this bodily function that happens. And that it doesn't really matter, that I can do whatever I want with it. We talked about it last week. It's just eating a steak. It's no big deal. It doesn't matter who you have sex with and what you've done with it. It doesn't matter. And what the problem is that we should have elevated it. I used to have people say to me when I would teach this to teenagers, because I used to teach this to my teenagers, and they would say, Kent, aren't you afraid? You're just telling kids that if they go have sex, they can marry somebody and then it's over. And I was like, yeah, that's what the Bible says. Like, But I don't think most teens are pretty smart, and that scares the snot out of them. It doesn't make them go, oh, I can't wait to get married. It makes them go, oh, you're saying that there's more to what's happening than what I thought it was? And yeah, I'm saying there's way more to what's happening than what you thought it was. It is so much bigger of a deal than what we make it out to be in our world, because in our world, it's just something you do. And so what do? We create this environment where we taste test each other and we figure out if it's going to work or not, instead of taking the time to slow down and say, you know what? It's okay for us to slow down and really evaluate. So here's what happens. You marry somebody because they were a good roommate. You marry somebody because you had a dog together, and how do you cut a dog in half? I don't know. It'd be easier to just get married. You get married because you have a washer and dryer together. Well, I don't want him to get the washer. So you get married, and this is why cohabitation leads to higher rates of divorce. Because the whole time, did you hear earlier I said that you're worried that at any point they could leave the relationship? It's because you never unified everything. And so it is easy to walk out when I keep all my money to myself anyway. I have no connection to you, so I can walk out anytime I want because I'm already paying all my own bills and I'm already doing all this stuff on my own. And all this, and you know, it's crazy to me. People don't see how much inequality all this creates, because always somebody is doing better than the other person. It just creates all these problems. And I'm not, this is not me standing up here saying, trying to be judgmental and saying, Kent knows how to do this well and you don't. It's just saying, all of us were raised in the system that gave us this. And it's not helpful. It breaks things. Listen, sex is the most amazing gift of a God who loves us and wants to help us continue to desire one another. This is why he gives us sex in the first place. He wants you to desire one another. It is this amazing gift that he gives to married couples. So what would I say to you? I would say, stop in your mind letting sex be downgraded. Start talking to your kids about this stuff if you have kids. Figure out what's an appropriate age to start talking to them about it. If you came to this table and you had already had sex and you like that, you were like, Kent, you were just describing us, the bar, all that stuff. Like, don't come in here and beat yourself up and feel terrible. The point is to know who God is, to know how he created us and designed us, and to start pulling yourself into line with him. It's to start finding hope, finding healing, finding freedom. Move forward, right? Make sense to you? So my goal is not to make you feel guilty. Let me say this real quickly. This comes from Hebrews 13:4, where the author says this: marriage should be honored by all. It should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure. The reason he's saying that is because even in the New Testament time, sex was wildly misunderstood. It was crazy how far people took it. The way that we handle and think about sex really, really matters. And if I could, just right here, I want to put a little pin on the sermon, because there are some of you in here. I had somebody last week say, Kent, what about people who have been sexually abused or molested? And I want to deal very gently here real quickly, because what a terrible thing. And my hope is that this series of sermons isn't making you feel worse about yourself and beating you up, but that it is instead helping you to look at what happened to you and understand it through the framework of just how what you went through was as deeply egregious as you felt like it was. It was as wrong as it felt like it was. And let me even say this to you, because there's some of you, you know, your brain releases this concoction of hormones in the moment of sexual intercourse. And so there's some of you who may even feel this crazy guilt over, it felt good, so did I want it? Was I the cause? You weren't the cause. It was the adult's fault. It was their problem. It was not your problem. You were abused and taken advantage of, and it was as egregious as it seems. This should not make you feel worse about yourself. It should make you want to run to the Father who says, come to me. I saw it. It broke my heart. I am here for you. I want to walk with you. And let me just say this to you. If any of you are abusing a child, you need to get out of that house. You need to get away from those children. You need to get help and come talk to somebody. I will talk to you. I will help you find somebody. But you need to stop it now. because it is offensive and an egregious thing before God and before that child, and he does not take it lightly. He does not take it lightly. Good night. Getting me fired up, folks. Whew, I'm sorry. Implication number two. Let's keep going. Implication number two. So the first one is the demotion of sex. It becomes nothing. It's not that important. So I can do whatever I want to whoever I want. No big deal. It's just eating a steak anyway. Implication number two is the elevation of sexuality where God places it in its proper context. This is what's crazy to me about our world, is that the world will play both sides of this coin, right? So in one side, they'll be like, sex isn't a big deal. It's not, no, don't worry about it. Just do whatever you want. And then on the other side, they're over here saying, sex is everything, right? Sex, Matt, is everything. So much so that, have you ever seen those cologne commercials where they have, like, you don't know what the commercial is the whole time. They're like super sexy people and they're like, hey. Oh, I'm sexy and I'm going to parties and drinking champagne. And you're like, what is this commercial about? And then at the end, they come out and they're like, adieu by Blue Blue. And you're like, what was that about? Like, you know what the whole point of it was? To get your eyes glued to the screen because they had Kent up there going, right? Like, I am for hire if you need a model. Any of your businesses need a model. They're using, we know this, right? You marketing 101. What sells? What sells? Sex. Sex sells. Sex, I guarantee you, every adult TV show for 13-year-olds and up is going to have elements of sex and sexuality in it, and for a lot of them, they will be the main topic of conversation, right? You'll have shows where people will be in church, and they'll be... not referencing any particular show right now, but they'll be at like a little picnic after church and talking, and then the next minute, they're talking about who they were humping. Huh? That's the reality of the world we live in, right? Where sex, in one sense, is meaningless, it's nothing. And then all of a sudden in the world, it's everything. It's all we can talk about, all we think about. It's all I do with my spare time is think about sex. And here's what the subtle message is. I referenced this last week. We're going to dig into it a little bit today. The subtle message is this in our world, is that you are primarily a sexual being. That's the subtle message. That is what defines you. It is how you should think of yourself and how you do what you do. So actually, what I wanted to do is I want to show you that when sex loses its purpose and its context, it can be elevated to a place it was never meant to hold. All right? So here's what I want to do. I want to show you just a few different things that happens when you elevate sex to a place it was never meant to hold. Here's the problem with believing that you're primarily a sexual being. The first one is this. You will believe that your inclinations are natural to who you are. And what that means for you is it means that there is no victory over them or changing them. What I mean is that if you believe you are primarily a sexual creature, a sexual, like this is your identity, you will believe that whatever your predilections are when it comes to sex are part of who you are. They're innate to you. They're natural to you. You were born with them. You believe that about yourself. And if you believe that about yourself, guess what? You'll never be able to address or change them. How do I know this? Now, some of you are going, now, Kent, listen, people are born a certain way and they have certain sexual desires, certain fantasies, certain fetishes, whatever word you want to come up with for it. You can't say that that stuff isn't innate. Let me tell you a study that was done, and this is going to be a little more graphic than I like to get in sermons, but it really highlights the point. There were some men, young men, who were asked, are you turned on by violent pornography? Graphic violent pornography. And these men were like, no, does not interest me at all. I never watch it. I don't get involved in it. No. And this is what the study was. They gave those same men laptops loaded up with graphic, violent pornography. And they said, we want you to masturbate in front of these laptops while you watch these images and these videos. So the men began to pleasure themselves in front of these computers. They brought them back in and they said, men, are you attracted to graphic, violent pornography? You know what the men started to say? Yes. Yeah, I want it. Do you know why? Because there is a concoction of hormones being released in their brain at the moment that they're looking at that stuff. Why? Because God intended it to be this great, amazing gift in a marriage to draw a husband and wife together, but instead it is connecting them to what they're looking at in that moment. And it is almost impossible for you to separate all the different confluences of influences in your life that have led you to some of the sexuality issues that you have in your life. And the problem is if you see yourself primarily as a sexual being, guess what? You will think that all those inclinations and all those desires that you have, that they are innate to who you are. And you will say, that is who I am, and so it cannot be changed. And you will become static in it, and you will become hopeless, and you will find no zero victory over it. You'll believe these inclinations are natural to you. That's the second one. Here's the second piece that happens when we start to think this way. Second one is this. You'll believe that what you do is your business only. You believe nobody has a right to speak into this because it's me and it's my nature and it's who I am and it's how I was made. And so you believe nobody has the right to speak into your sexuality. And hear me out. I know what I am saying flies in the face of our culture. What I'm actually trying to get Christians to start doing is going, you do not live in a Christianized culture anymore. You live in a paganized culture. Christian, Christ culture, God-ordained culture is so upside down from it. As a matter of fact, Jesus would say things that were basically like, you thought it was this way, I'm saying it's this way. And he would flip the world upside down. And I'm trying to flip your worlds upside down. I am saying to you, your world right now says nobody has the right to speak into your sex life, your sexuality, because it's your business only. The problem is this. It excludes God, the one who should be able to speak into you. It excludes his design from the equation. God actually, well, he was thoughtful about how he created. Don't you know that? He was thoughtful about what he put into you. Don't you know, if you're a Christian, don't you believe that you live in a fallen world that has fallen ideas about things that are corrupted? So why are you biting on those? Why are you biting on those and nibbling on them and eating them as though it's the truth? Third one, here we go. This one's huge. You can begin to confuse your identity with your sexuality. You're saying, Kent, that if I believe, now you may never have said, I believe I'm a sexual creature, right? But if you believe deep down that you are, your identity is sexual, like creature, that's who you are, you can begin to confuse your identity with your sexuality, believing that your sexuality, your gender, your biases define who you are. They become your identity. They become the way that you talk about yourself and you speak about yourself. And I need to, just for a moment, put a little pin here and talk to all of you, because it could be real easy to take what Kent's saying in this whole sermon and beat people over the head and say, see, I told you, see, this is how it is. And that's not the point of this. That's not at all what I'm trying to do. What I'm trying to, actually, my heart breaks for a lot of people because they have bought into this lie and they live their entire life and they believe that their entire life is defined by what they do with this stuff. Could you imagine your whole life being defined by your private parts and what you do with them? It is heartbreaking and tragic to me, the lies that people have bought into and lived under. And guess what, heterosexual people, if that's you, they're not the only ones who have bought into those lies. I don't know how many men I've seen in churches who have a secret addiction to pornography. Probably women today too in our culture. They have this secret addiction. They won't admit it to anybody. They're just as broken. And guess what? You have begun to believe that it is your identity. You'll say things like, I just can't ever break it. I can't stop. I try over and over again. It becomes an identity to you. Could I say this to you? Could I offer something that I think has given men a lot of freedom and probably women? I hope it gives it to women too. I just know the male experience. Your primary identity is not as a sexual creature. Listen to this. But as a spiritual creature with a sexual nature. You were created for a specific purpose. And the purpose was not just to find things to do with your private parts. The purpose was to find something to do with your entire being for God, and that you are a spiritual being who happens to inhabit a body right now, a physical body. You know how I know this? Have you ever seen a person who's dead? I know this is a strange shift. You ever seen a person that's dead? You know what people will often say when they see a dead person? They'll say, that's just not them. You ever heard somebody say that? That's not them. That's not them. Why? Because it's not them. They were a spiritual person who embodied a body and brought that body and animated that body and made a difference with that body. And their life was not in the body. Listen, Genesis 1, 26 through 27. This is another creation story. And it is a creation story that was intended, help people understand their purpose. Listen to how God speaks about this. Verse 26 and following of Genesis chapter 1. Then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness. Who is God making in his image? Mankind. He's making them in his image so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds of the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. We talked about this a little bit last week. Do you remember about God created us to rule? He created us to want to bring things into order. On Friday, went out to the Red River Gorge. I was just out there. I just needed to get away, spend some time with God. Jenny was at work. Kids were at school. I was like, I'm just going to the gorge. And so I went to the gorge, and there's this beautiful area called the Clifty Wilderness. If you've never been there, so beautiful. You should go and take a drive out there today. Like, miss the Super Bowl, all right? Beautiful. And here's what, there's this sign and it says, what you're looking at is a designated wilderness area. We have, and basically what the sign says is, man is not allowed to touch it. There's no electrical poles, there's no roads. Do you know why? Because what man's nature is to take things like wilderness and bring it into order. It's what we do. It's what you were created for. You were created to rule the creation. So we literally have to be like, you can't touch, this part's too beautiful, don't touch it, all right? Let's just go over there, go to Louisville or something. You can do whatever you want with those people. I'm just kidding, people. But don't touch this. Don't touch this. We were created for that. So listen. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. You weren't created just to find things to do with your private parts. You were created to reflect God's image in the world. This is the power of what God, remember Jesus saying, the kingdom of heaven is near? That was the gospel he preached, that he was bringing God's kingdom, God's rule and reign back into the world that we live in. It was because God has always longed to partner with you, humanity, to bring his order, his created order under his reign. And so what does he do? He brings Jesus into this world to die on a cross so that he could restore unity with mankind and bring us under his reign and rule again instead of the reign and rule of Satan. And we could be freed from sin and brought into a life of hope so that we could then reflect his image everywhere you go, even Louisville. You could take the heart of God with you everywhere. And the problem is, in our world, sex has become the thing. It's what's elevated. It becomes your identity. Can I just say to you, what a low, low place to put your, like a low bar to set your identity at. You are meant to be world changers. You were meant to bring wherever God has put you in charge, wherever you already have authority, your family, you're meant to bring his reign and rule there. Like his love, his goodness. Your workplace, if you're a manager, if you have authority there, you are not just managing for yourself and for your business. You are to bring God's reign and rule there. That's mind-boggling that God would want to use you in that way. You were created to reflect his image. So let me just say this. When we put sex and sexuality in its proper context, It gives you the freedom to let God write a different story with your life. A story as an image bearer of God. I've known a lot of men who have struggled with pornography. I mentioned that I've known that. And a lot of good men in the church, like, it's a struggle. Our world is full of it. And one of the things that I found has helped them find freedom is when they give up this idea that they were made that way. God, that's the fallen part of you. God didn't make you that way. He intends something so much better for you. And it is not your identity, because if it's your identity, then you can't find victory in it. You'll never defeat it. It'll be this thing you're always fighting against. What if you died to it and you looked for new life in Him? What if you started to recognize that your identity was not in your sexual nature, but your identity was in who you are in Christ, and so you made that the mainstay of every thought that you had and everything that you did? You started to go after God like crazy. What could that change? What kind of freedom could you find? Listen to this. This passage blows me away in the Message version. This is Romans 8, 29 through 30. I love how they say this. Listen to it. God knew. Actually, would you guys do me a huge favor? Don't fall asleep, right? I'd like you to close your eyes and don't fall asleep. And close your eyes and listen to this as though God is speaking it over you, okay? I know that's a little intimidating or whatever, but I don't care. Just do it. Listen. God knew what He was doing from the very beginning. He decided from the outset to shape the lives of those who love Him along the same lives as the life of His Son. The Son stands first in the line of humanity He restored. We see the original and intended shape of our lives there in Him. After God made that decision of what His children should be like, He followed it up by calling people by name. He called you by name. Sherry, Debbie, Ethan. He called you by name. After He called them by name, He set them on a solid basis with Himself. And then after getting them established, He stayed with them to the end, gloriously completing what He had begun. Gloriously completing. God wants to stick with you to the end. He's calling you by name. This sermon, if anything, it's so dangerous to preach on this stuff, because you're going to take it and do whatever you want with it. And it could be something that makes you walk away from the church. It could be something that makes you question stuff. It could make you feel guilty. There are a million emotions that could be coming up and rising to the surface right now. But what I want you to remember, if I could get you to remember one thing, it's that God is committed to you. And He wants so deeply to complete something in you. He wants you. He desires you. Some of you know that my own history was that I was a terrible person before coming to know Jesus. I was just a hoodlum as a kid. When I was 10 years old, I can remember being at a buddy's house, and my parents didn't drink alcohol at all, so I didn't have any alcohol in our house, but his parents drank Coke and Jack every night. And so he was telling us about it, and I was like, well, dude, that sounds good. Let's try it. I love Coke, and I like people named Jack, so let's try it. And so he makes us some Cokes and Jack, and we all drink them, and we're like, oh, man, this is good, man. Oh, I love it. I get why adults do this, you know, and we're drinking it, and we get drunk as 10-year-olds, and we're giggling, and, you know, 10-year-old drunk is a little comic, and then my buddy was like, hey, my dad has a bunch of pornography. You guys want to go look at it? And that was the first day that I was exposed to pornography. I saw all these images of naked women, women who were not my wife, women who I really had no right or business looking at, women that would stick with me for years. Then I went in high school a little bit later. I would go over to this buddy's house, and we'd stay the night at his dad's house. And we liked to stay the night there because his dad would get slobbery drunk and go pass out. And then we would drink his liquor. We knew that he flipped the bottles upside down to market, and so he just had a little water or whatever he needed to later. And so we would drink his liquor, and he had stacks. This is back when pornography was all physical, and I mean, kind of physical. And we would look at stacks of his pornography. But can I tell you something that's crazy is, even at that point, I wasn't highly turned on by women, by the physical form of a woman. Now, there, I was kind of like, I feel nervous, right? Like, I didn't know how to express it, but I wasn't like, I dreamed about it all the time. It wasn't like I had to have it in my life. It wasn't like, oh, I got to see more of that right now. But it did start some journeys inside of me. And then I was like mid-high school, and I was watching some TV show. I don't remember what it was, but they were talking about people being gay on the TV show. And all I knew was that I wasn't like all my other friends. It for real was like they had been starving and they were hungry and they had never eaten and they needed to eat right now. Like they needed to look at naked women all the time. And they would see a girl walk by, like you'd be in the gym and in like the locker room, and they'd be like, dude, did you see her butt? Oh my gosh. And here's what I thought when they would say that. This is not Kent trying to be crass. This is just the truth. When they would say that, I'd be like, her butt, and this is in my mind, her butt, she poops with that thing, man. Right? Like, don't you know? Like, you guys not taking a human anatomy? What's going on? Like, I didn't get it. And so I'm watching this TV show as a teenager, sitting on my couch. This is all so, like, in my mind, I can see myself doing all this. And I'm sitting there, and this thought went through my head. I wonder if I'm gay. I wonder if I'm gay. It wasn't that I was attracted to men. It was that I wasn't really super attracted to women. What if I'm just gay? I'm kind of soft and flabby. I don't know. Am I gay? And it wasn't until years later that I started to recognize that all of that pressure as a young man, it didn't come from God. It came from me growing up in this world that has elevated sex to such a high level that everybody has to decide who they are and what they are, and you have to know it right now, and you better figure it out, and blah, blah, blah. And if you're a virgin, you better know. And it's elevated so high, and you got to have a girlfriend, and you got to have a boyfriend, and you got to do all this stuff, and if you don't, there's something wrong with you. And there's so much pressure on it because it is who you are. And what I'm saying to you is give your children the chance to step out of that. You step out of that. That's not your identity. See, what I found out was I loved women, and I just happened to get to marry the most beautiful. Like, she is so good looking, man. Y'all suckers lost out. I got to marry her because I found out but it took time, and it was like, it just wasn't there. I wasn't gay. I just had people putting a lot of pressure on me when I was young to make decisions, and it wasn't even like people, it was just the world. Because our world has no sense about what sexuality means. Our world is just following a stream of thought right now. Man, today, I want to offer to you, maybe for you, you're sat here, you've listened to the sermon, and it is, like, maybe it's pricked you, maybe it's poked you into some different ways, maybe it's made you think some different things that you've never thought. My goal is not to tell you everything you need to know about this subject or give you all the 5 steps you need to do. My goal is to give you the bones of it. And for you guys to start to build the flesh around it, for you to actually use your adult brains to seek God and go, God, what does this mean for my relationship? God, where do I need healing? Where do I need restoration? Where do I need freedom? Because I'll tell you, in my life, as I started to find the healing, and as I started to find the restoration, and as I started to take things to God, and I started to find out I'm created for something so much more. I actually, one time I was in a zoo, and I remember seeing this chimpanzee, and I was looking at it. Have you ever seen an animal, and you're just like, man, that is incredible. I was watching, it was like picking some leaves apart, and it was eating it and looking at him. I was like, it's hard to think that we didn't come from that, right? Like, it's hard to think that I'm not just this animal that has animalistic tendencies, and that I came from that. And so I'm watching it do that, and then I watch this chimpanzee. As I'm thinking this, I'm like, God, did we just really come from chimps? Like, I don't know. I watch it, and the chimp reaches his hand under its backside. It lays some soft serve in its hand, and it pulls it up and starts eating it. And I was like, nope, no, like, not my aunt and uncle. Like, Because you know, don't you? That you were created so much higher than that. You were actually created to be there to care for the chimpanzees, to love them, to come around them and rule and provide places of habitat and sanctuary for them. You were actually created to be God's caretaker for all of that. You are not, hear me today, you are not an animal. You are not created to just let every urge come out of you and do whatever you want with it. You were created to let the Spirit of God come into you and come through you and do whatever He wants with you. Good night. That's what He's called you to. And some of you, you didn't even know. You didn't even know that there was a God who loved you that much that He wanted to come and restore the order. He wanted to come and He would give His own life. He would love you so dearly to come and subject Himself to the cruelty and evil in this world so that He could reach across the divide and pull you back to Him. That's what the cross is all about, don't you know? But He went above and beyond. When He died, He was in a grave for 3 days and then He rose again. Because when He flexes His muscles, buttons start to pop, like shirts start to rip. He is the God of the universe. And you know what? He's calling out your name. Ethan, Sherry, He's calling out your name. So today, could I just ask you this last question? Why would you run from Him? Why wouldn't you run to Him? This is your chance. This is your moment. He longs to heal you. He longs to bring restoration. He knows that you didn't know any better. He's not up there going, see, I told you, you're a really bad person. He's not saying that. He's saying, I came because I knew all that about you, and I still came because I want you desperately. Good night. He's so good. Don't miss Him. Please don't miss Him. Today, during this next song, there's going to be several of us up here. If you need to come and pray for a family member, maybe there's somebody in your family who is lost and far from God, come and pray for them. If you need to just sit in your chair today and just weep before God and go, God, I just didn't know. I want to be yours. I am yours. If you need to come and talk to somebody and accept Jesus like those two in the first service did, holy smokes, that's so good. Like Super Bowl Sunday, we killed it. Bengals ain't got nothing on us. Come and find Jesus today. This is your time. Will you guys stand with us and worship? During this time, you can partake of communion and offering, but don't miss being with the God of the universe.